from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to eighth time. Let's get their work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Berrettini lost one into right field. Playable. Tyler O'Neill is there, and he puts it away. The Boston Red Sox have won the middle game of the series, defeating the Astros for the first time this year. That snaps a 7-game winning streak for Houston against the Red Sox, dating back to last season. Astros, with a loss tonight, have still won 11 of their last 13 games. Tough one tonight.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Wednesday to all of you. Welcome in. Ben, cue that up again.
This clapping?
Yeah, it almost sounds like it's somebody who's in the booth with Callis clapping.
It's definitely it's an obnoxious Bostonian who's right below the booth.
Right below them, yeah. But I'm like, at first I'm like, who is this Judas with headsets on that's clapping next to Callis over there? Play one more time, Ben.
Berrettini lost one into right field. Playable. Tyler O'Neill is there, and he puts it away. The Boston Red Sox have won the middle game
right there. Right there. Sounds like it's Blum doing it. Blum. Like, Blum, why are you clapping? We lost.
You know what? They need this. They need this little shot in the arm to just remind them, man. Yeah. It's hard. You've been winning a lot of games lately, but still.
I'll tell you what about that. As we welcome you in on a Wednesday show, I'm Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. Man, we got a lot to get to on the show. We'll find something. That's what you're supposed to say. I do find that I'm getting a little bit complacent. I did not even check to see until I had to do the sports report that I do for the FMs. I hadn't even checked to see how the Mariners did last night.
Oh, they had a late game in Dodgers.
They were winning when I went to bed. They were up 3-1 or 3-0 on the Dodgers. And I'm like, well, they'll find a way to blow this, the Mariners. And sure enough, they did. The Dodgers beat them 6-3. But the fact that I was only checking it once I had to check it, so I had all my information, I had to kind of check myself and say, man, I got to at least keep my eye on the rear view mirror. Yeah. You know, yesterday I said that I'm not worried.
Check yourself,
Sean. I'm not too worried before I wreck myself. I'm not worried about the Mariners. I'm worried about the Yankees. Mm-hmm. Catching the Yankees, not worried about the Mariners catching us. But maybe I need to.
Good job, Dodgers.
Maybe I need to. Way to go.
To help us out,
thanks,
bros.
Buddy. Yeah, the 3 days a year we like the Dodgers when they're playing the Seattle
Mariners.
They
didn't start until 9 o'clock our time or so.
Can't do it, man.
No way in hell.
Can't stay up for that.
I got enough AL West games I got to stay up for. Astros AL West games.
How you feeling, man? How you doing?
I feel good. Yeah. I feel good. I know I'm not too distraught over last night other than my lingering concerns over Blanco. The Justin Verlander return versus some guy I don't know tonight is something.
It's today. It's a 1 o'clock.
Today, excuse me.
Yeah, it's
me,
a 1 o'clock.
This afternoon is something that should hopefully try to keep. You know, Blanco's been wobbling on and off the tracks over the last several weeks.
Big time, yeah.
And he just needs a rest. He's pitched more innings than he's ever pitched before than Verlander coming back in. The other part that goes with that is, as I hope that means good things for Blanco, you've also got Verlander coming back who pitched 57 pitches in his rehab start. Yeah. But part of that might have been because there was an offensive surge by Sugarland, so there was a long time between the second and third innings. So who knows? But he only pitched 5 innings in his 2 starts before he went on IL, too. So You're going to be keeping one less reliever on the squad to accommodate six starting pitchers.
Yep.
They're going to be tested. They're going to be tested in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And it's a very, look, it's the pitching staff has been great, but it's a test.
Yeah, Blanco getting knocked out early last night was not optimal.
Yeah.
Because Verlander, we don't know what kind of pitch count. Verlander's on a pitch count. Espada was being kind of dodgy about it when he was asked about it. He's like, mm-hmm. Well, we'll just kind of see how it goes. But I have to believe once he starts getting up around 70 or 75 pitches, it's yoink for him, which means he better be super efficient on those 75 yeah. pitches.
And he hasn't been efficient this year.
Well, and they're in the middle. There's no off days coming
right,
up anytime
right.
soon. Like
yeah.
they're playing for the next 2 weeks straight.
Versus good opponents.
Versus good opponents, too. Yeah, I mean, they could be playing against the A's and all the crappy teams, and it would still be a problem just because, you know, you got to play nine innings and all these things.
Dare I be a meek enough soul to just say, you know what, you got to let's have some good showings versus these teams, but I don't need it to be an impressive onslaught or anything. This is what good baseball teams do.
You
play 500 baseball with surges like they just had, and get some really good pitching, and then there we go.
Yeah, yeah. We'll keep the pitching going for sure. And then Tucker looks like he's doing more stuff before games.
Yeah, it's all these updates like, hey, he's working on running normally.
Look at him. There he is crow hopping in the outfield. Like,
kinda.
He's doing weird stuff. I don't know.
You're intrigued by the crow hop. Why are you, that's
I don't know, because it's the first I've ever heard. A, it's the first I've ever heard it called a crow hop.
You have? That's okay.
And B, I just never heard it called a crow hop before. And B, why am I getting updates on it? Why is that such a big deal that he's crow hopping?
I guess, I'm surprised you've never heard the term crow hop, but I guess, it's that he's working on all of these basic things. Like, it's almost like teaching somebody who's had a stroke how to learn to do the basic things again. And it can be a long process in coming back from a stroke.
Yeah.
They've made incredible advancements in stroke recovery, and yet it's long. And that's what it feels like it feels like he had a stroke on his shin.
It's funny. I brought up, somebody texted me yesterday.
Eating with a fork now.
Yeah, I forget who texted me yesterday, and I apologize because it might even be a coworker. I can't remember. But I brought up Will Anderson's ankle.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about how this ankle with Will Anderson is concerning, because until we know otherwise, this could be an ankle injury that's just a lingering thing from the ankle injury he suffered last year.
Yeah.
And we invoked the name of Steph Curry. And again, somebody texted me yesterday that heard me talking about it either on this show or on the podcast, and on the Utopia podcast, and they said they had to basically teach Steph Curry how to walk again.
Yeah.
With that ankle injury. So maybe that's what they're doing with Kyle Tucker.
Teaching like them how they're doing all the basics.
Yeah.
You got to start from square one.
How to talk, how to hold a fork.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I told you was you worry with something like this, where with a deep bone bruise and when they're swelling potentially, you know, I don't know exactly how everything went, but it shuts everything down. So it might be a relatively minor injury, and you're going to recover from it at some point, but you don't know how or when.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, because you can't use your calf, because you can't walk normally or anything, all the muscles, everything, it just kind of shuts down, and you get atrophy. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that basic just coming back. Maybe you'll learn how to walk better. Maybe he'll learn how to crow hop better and run normally better.
Stronger than ever.
Yes.
I had forgotten. You sent me the Chandler Rome article this morning. With all these issues in the outfield, the Astros outfield's not good right now. They're doing good things. Like, Jake Meyers had a nice catch last night. Jake Meyers has like one catch every three games where you're like, all right, well, that's why his 220 bat is in the lineup every day. You know, he had that the catch last night where he robbed somebody, I forget who, of extra bases. But the outfield's not good right now. Like, Trey Cabbage got promoted. That's how bad the outfield is right now. And
Cabbage,
he's terrible.
Got promoted because Pedro Leon. Espada said he wanted to see Pedro Leon get some work in AAA.
Yeah.
He's had years in AAA.
Yeah.
And we saw exactly why he's been stuck in AAA.
Yes.
He's an affront to baseball fundamentals.
Yeah,
he does not have any respect for any kind of rule book.
Yeah. I forgot that Abreu on the Red Sox was part of that Vasquez trade.
Wyler Abreu. They should never let Abreu go. Wyler Abreu was traded part of their package to get Vasquez.
Right.
And it made me think of, okay, all of the scrutiny over the Kikuchi trade. And we admitted at the time, even though we were skeptical of the Kikuchi trade, part of it was that we'd seen these guys. Plus, they were young prospects where you'd seen upside, but not enough opportunity to see the downside. So you thought, oh, okay, well, these guys are phenoms. And what the hell? You're letting go of these phenoms. You go back to the Vasquez trade, and it's not like anybody was crying a million tears over the loss of Wyler Abreu.
Right.
And yet he's turned into a good player. It was really worth it, though. I mean, they I don't know if they win that World Series without Vasquez. You know, obviously he wasn't a superstar of it or anything, but you needed Vasquez on that squad.
My philosophy with that is Vasquez could have gone 0-35.
Right.
You won the World Series. Yeah. So whatever sets of events you put in motion in the universe ended up resulting in a World Series.
Yeah.
So you do everything the same.
You get it. No, there a lot of stuff without huge production or anything. A lot of stuff could have gone wrong.
Yeah.
If you had Maldonado out there for more or just whomever else in
Vasquez
there.
Caught the no hitter. People forget that, man. He was the one behind the plate when Javi and friends threw the no hitter.
He was on our list of underappreciated Astros who might be lost to history. Like it'll be a trivia question 20 years from now on the TV broadcast. You know, and only diehard Astros remember Vasquez.
But yeah.
Yeah, I miss Vasquez.
I
despised him when he was with the Astros because with the Red Sox. Because remember, they went through that stretch where they had just so many like dudes that looked alike with beards and everything.
And Verdugo
they had like a vibe, like a gritty vibe about them love if they were your team.
Yeah, if I remember, he was good in the ALCS against them too.
Yeah.
Or whatever round they played them in the playoffs that year. I forget which. But so anyways, the Astros lose last night 6-5, but the Mariners lose as well. So all is well in the world. They're still up by 5 games. Verlander today. It's a big Verlander start today, man.
V-Day.
It's a big Verlander start. Because if Verlander looks shaky, and we're living in the moment right now, right? I mean, we've got like a month and a half left of the season. If Verlander is shaky, now you've got Blanco, who I don't trust anymore. Arrigetti, who's done good things lately, but just inherently with him being a rookie approaching innings
he's
amounts.
About to pass his career high.
Like he may not be in the circle of trust at all this season, just based on his profile.
Oh yeah, you know? We haven't done the circle of trust once this season. That's how weird a year it's been.
Yeah,
Arrigetti. I guess I'm higher on the trust level than you right now. I feel good about Arrigetti.
I feel like in the moment I feel good about him, but if he's your fourth best starter, like going into the postseason, like, and that's why I say if Verlander comes back and he's Verlander, you know, for a few starts, and you're like, okay, well, for the time being, you know, until Verlander pulls another neck muscle, you've got Framber, you've got Hunter Brown, you got Verlander, and to me, it's in that order right now. Like, Verlander doesn't get anointed and just put back at the top of the rotation. Framber's your guy right now.
Yeah.
And so is Hunter Brown. They're not only maybe the best duo of, like, the best duo right now in the American League, like, there's probably an argument that since June 1st or May 15th, or whatever arbitrary date you want to slap down post Hunter Brown's early season meltdown, that they're two of the best five pitchers in the American League right now.
Biggest thing about Arrigetti is we enter this stretch where you're going to have one less reliever on the roster because you've got a 6-man rotation, which is great, but Arrigetti rarely goes more than 6 innings.
Yeah.
You know, and like his last outing wasn't a great one, but he's had quality starts.
Yeah.
He goes 6 innings pretty regularly, but he's not an innings eater by any stretch of the imagination. And then Kikuchi, same thing. Kikuchi can't get to 6 innings.
Yeah.
That's the ceiling that eludes him.
Yes.
If he can reach that magical six innings, really have something with Kikuchi.
He pitches into the 7th inning and a start, it's on.
There's another thing about the Red Sox right now that makes me a little bit nervous about Kikuchi.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hold that.
Okay.
All right, we'll do that coming up next. We've also got some Texans that we've got to get to coming up next. We got some praise for the Texans from somebody that I loved hearing it, but we've got to put it through a filter. So we'll do that.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Seth's showing me crow hop videos. I know what it is now. I just didn't know that's what it was called.
Yeah. You had poor instruction in Little League, I think.
That's a definite possibility, for sure.
Here you go. This is Sean. You're just taking that hop to load up. And
gotcha.
Boom.
Yeah. Gotcha.
You ever watch a crow? You ever just sit around watching crows?
Probably.
They do kind of little sideways hop.
Yeah.
They're interesting creatures, the crows.
Crows?
Yeah. Very intelligent.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
They're better at the crow hop than Kyle Tucker is right now.
For sure. I'm better at the crow hop than Kyle Tucker.
I don't watch any
right
videos
now.
Of crow hops learning to crow hop again. Yeah, the way Kyle Tucker is.
What was your Red Sox thing?
Oh,
you
real quick,
to bring
just
up?
So the Red Sox were on a tear pitching before the All-Star break, first half of the season. They were awesome. And
that ended.
Since then, they've been atrocious.
Yeah.
One of the things they did, and this is where it's tied into Kikuchi, was they just stopped throwing as many fastballs. Their analytics bros, same way the Astros have analytics bros, realize, okay, the fastballs, people are sitting and waiting on fastballs. They know exactly, they're anticipating it. So they stopped throwing fastballs, and they were awesome. And then the league caught up, and people realized, like, oh, okay, this is the deal. So I wonder with Kikuchi, where, you know, he came in, stopped throwing his fastball as much, especially during the Rays, that, oh, okay, maybe this would be a different version, right? If there's any kind of catching up, I hope that they're more ready for it than the Red Sox were.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I think, like, history tells us with pitchers pre-Kikuchi that the Astros probably do a pretty good job of. They're not just a one strategy, and then, like, the league adjusts, like, well, we're out
that's
of ideas.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We had something there.
We're the idea factory. One idea. That's it. So 1:10 p.m. today, first pitch, Justin Verlander. This will be one of the more interesting regular season games today to see what Verlander looks like. So we'll have eyes on that for sure. Diana Rossini was on the Dan Patrick show yesterday, and they Dan Patrick and the crew asked her about training camps she's been to. She and Kay Adams are the two, and Diana Rossini, that have been traveling around to all the camps and doing these interviews and podcasts. And she's been traveling around with Chase Daniel, former quarterback. Like, they're doing stuff where they're driving in the car together, and they're like, it's pretty fun. Like,
Chase Daniel's real bright. I love backup quarterbacks.
Yeah,
they're good for their analysis because they've been through so many systems. Usually, they've had to make it with guile,
right?
If they make it a long time league, like, they have to know the offense, you know, because they don't have the physical skills of the starters.
It would be like if they stuck like Orlovsky with Kay Adams as a team, and now you've got. you know, now you've got the reporter who's got kind of that soft touch that every all of a sudden you're getting the best information out of these guys. And then you got Chase Daniel doing the football stuff. Anyways, Rossini has been around to all these different camps. She works for The Athletic now. She's got a podcast for The Athletic, The Scoop. And she was on Dan Patrick yesterday. And they asked her about what are some of the camps that have surprised you by how bad the team has been.
Yeah.
And she rattled off a few of them, but then said, man, I was hoping you would ask me what's the team that surprised me how awesome they are.
The question I would have preferred was, what's the camp I went to where I went, oh, wow. And that was the Houston Texans. Holy cow. I knew they were good when I showed up. I left like, and look, I went on a day that everyone told me CJ was unbelievable. But I just was watching going, who is going
to So you're
to
all
stop?
In. They're a Super Bowl contender.
I am all in on the Houston Texans just based on what they're building.
It's it really is. You know, Sean, you and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago. We almost, when you're out there at practice every day, you sometimes you step back and you realize, like, holy, what am I watching here? Well, because there's so much receiving talent down the field, but they're having battles with the cornerbacks, the starting cornerbacks. That there's just there at the skill positions on offense and defense, you've got a boatload of talent, and it's really, especially in training camp where the run game, it's impossible to judge whether a team's running well or not during training camp. I've got my reservations about that, but the actual skill position players, it's kind of freaky to see all those receivers out on the field at the same time.
Yeah,
you don't get that. Even on high-powered offenses, it's rare that you have three elite caliber skill sets at your wide receiver group.
It's insane because this team has rarely had two really good receivers at the same time, let alone three. Like when Andre Johnson was here, and this is no disrespect to Kevin Walter, but Kevin Walter wasn't any of these guys we're watching now. Kevin Walter was like, a really solid Kubiak-style wide receiver.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it was everything that, would block real well, which they care a lot more about than people realize, but it wasn't right. He wasn't an electric wide receiver.
Nobody's game planning for him. Yeah. You know what I mean? And even when Hopkins was here, probably the best they had was Will Fuller, who couldn't stay on the field.
I mean, you had Andre and DeAndre together.
But even like that, like it was the first year was DeAndre's rookie year where he was like a 700-yard guy. Yeah. And then the second year was when Hopkins went up and Andre went down to 900 yards. Like they weren't like
they weren't at the peak of their power.
Yeah,
together.
These guys are all like either entering their prime or in their prime right now. So that's exciting. Rossini said that there were little things she saw at practice that made her realize what the culture is like here.
Okay, something even simple and small. This is tiny, but this is important. And it's been told to me by many people. It's important in the big grand scheme of things. When they make good plays during the preseason, when guys are scoring touchdowns, backups, players that we may never even see again in the NFL, the way the sideline, the way the starters are running down into the end zone and showing that support, because what that is, that's culture, right? That's D'Amico Ryans. That's him saying, we are going to be there for everybody on this team, not just the superstars.
It sounds kind of silly because like, oh, what are we grading, celebrating and stuff? I would say that, you know, having been on various teams with various head coaches, there's times where the head coach is a hard ass but tries to coach enthusiasm. You guys need to support each other more.
Cheer louder. Yeah,
you need to be more supportive of each other and get excited for each other. But meanwhile, you're walking on eggshells all the time because you're terrified of getting yelled at or cut and all that. So it's something that really flows down from the personality of the head coach.
So that's real.
And part of that's an offshoot of just D'Amico's. You know, D'Amico encourages all of it, of course, but it's got to happen naturally. And I do think that there's a certain, like, there's a certain joy about the way these guys go about practice that it's cool to watch because it looks like, all right, they enjoy practicing. Like, they're out there, they're having fun, but they're like, and working their butts off.
Yep.
But that's the approach. If you go through life with that approach, you end up being one of these people or one of those teams that almost like never looks like they have a real job because they're just having fun doing what they're doing.
It was really funny.
Yeah.
Kamari Lassiter in his media session a couple days ago on Monday said something. I should go find the cut, but it just popped into my head just now. something to the effect of like things he can improve on. He's like, I probably need to be more enthusiastic and practice after good plays.
Well, you know what?
Get him, D'Amico.
D'Amico had to come to Jesus meeting of called him in. Bring your playbook. And he opens up the playbook and he writes down, have more fun.
Yeah. Pile on.
No, I think that's it's one of those things too. It's where like that's like if Diana Rossini were to say that, and meanwhile the Texans start off 0-4,
they go 5-12.
Feel like what the hell are we even talking about? 5-12
with the happiest practices ever.
But I do think that one of the things is in life and in football. So think about in football and in an NFL career, 10 years, 11, 12 years, you've had a long career.
Yeah.
By the time you get to your 9th, 10th, 11th year, you start to realize you do kind of the same thing that you do when you're in your 40s and 50s on a normal job. You start just genuinely feeling like, oh man, I gotta help the young people out. I gotta pour my asset needs to also be really focusing on everybody else. And it's a natural thing that happens as you get older. And I think like the faster that you can accelerate that process, you are able to end up with just a flat out better team that, you know, ideally you want 53 coaches on the field too. You know, if a guy's, if your teammate is having an issue on the field and one of the players can help correct him or get his mind right or do whatever, that's a hell of a lot more effective than waiting until the sideline or halftime before a coach fixes it.
Yeah, it's a good point.
But it's got to be something that happens every day as opposed to just somebody that all of a sudden starts either helping or, you know, constructively criticizing somebody.
Yeah.
So it's a culture thing. It is a culture
for
thing.
For sure. And Rossini did say this is a small thing. Like she wasn't overstating it, I think. But it is. It's very evident when you're out there for sure. Last one here. This was interesting too because Stephon Diggs big topic at this camp, man. Texan fans feeling good about Diggs. Buffalo fans and Viking fans trying to look for every little shred of possible dissent with Stephon Diggs. Here was Diana Rossini and what Stephon Diggs is learning about himself.
Stephon Diggs told me this has just been refreshing for him. He's growing up. He reflects on some of his younger years and just knows he made some mistakes and is ready now to really try to be the best at his position. And based on what I was watching out there, he's just been such an added bonus to this offense.
Yeah, this is where I'm always torn with this because I think the reports of Stephon Diggs in Buffalo for the first 2 years sounded exactly like they are now. Right. It's been the best thing ever for Josh Allen, their best buds, all of that.
Bills fans probably trolling Viking fans the way I like trolling Bills
Circle
fans.
Circle of
right
life,
now.
Right. Yeah. And so I guess a lot of it is, like, I don't care. I didn't expect, like, I don't. He's on a one-year contract. I think that, yes, he, like we just talked about, he'll mature over time the way many, many people do. I don't think it's going to be a factor, but I also do think maybe what probably is a surprise to Stephon Diggs is being plunged into this environment where you've got a quarterback who's a very heady quarterback, like he's a very like high football IQ quarterback, and then you've got other receivers to balance things out.
Yeah.
He might himself have been surprised by how much fun it is being in that environment when everything's just clicking right. It's probably, you talk to people from the military, and they'll talk about how, man, you go from like one company to another, and there's just different cultures. And sometimes you end up in one company, and you're just, it's a bad culture, you know, and it's not fun. And then you go to another company or unit, and it's a whole different deal. And it's not about as much as like you individually. It's like, oh, things are working well. Like, oh, stuff just functions the way it's supposed to function here. That's probably a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's probably a lot of fun.
Yeah. He might rather have 1,000 yards receiving, being with other great players, and obviously winning helps, than go get 1,400 yards being the guy.
It's fun to be on a good team.
Yeah, it's fun being on a good team.
Start feeling a lot better about yourself.
Good way to boil it down.
Yeah.
Now, here's where I don't want to be a hypocrite here. Because I'm really excited
about
everything.
Starting now?
Yeah.
All right.
I want to stop being a hypocrite. Diana Rossini was very excited about the Texans, which got me very excited that she had these observations. It is only 24 hours ago that I was reading this tweet from Diana Rossini with some disdain.
Oh.
Bo Nix is a stud. He operates in the Sean Payton offense like a veteran. It'd be a surprise if he's not the starter week one.
Mm.
Zach Wilson is also having a great camp with Denver. Strong arm.
Yeah.
Throws on time.
Ooh, they are.
asking good questions. One coach told me he's rejuvenated.
Rejuvenated he is.
Yeah. Mm.
We've seen it before. The whole thing with Bo Nix is that it's hard because I'm not trying to be a hater or anything. I just do wonder what some of the hubbub is about with
me
him.
Me too.
Because he's done a good job doing what they ask him to do, which is not a whole lot. He can create. He can threaten with his legs. He makes some circus throws of the shorter variety. But I haven't seen anything in preseason that makes me think like, oh, wow, this is something different or special. Caleb Williams has some issues with the consistency and his footwork and all this stuff that makes me question. But I feel like he's done more of the genuinely electrifying stuff. I feel like Bo Nix has gone out and he's improvised a little bit, but sometimes it's the bad improvisation. And he's been efficient against vanilla defenses. But I can't sit there and think, oh, yeah, this guy's ready for action.
Yeah.
It's... of those two, I think that Bo Nix has much more capacity for a 5-interception game.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you on that. Text message, 3 guys on the Giants ran down and cheered that big man for running down J.J. Taylor. Only 3. If that would have been our guy. That's true. Can you imagine, like, if Khalil Davis ran down, you know, if Khalil, who pick a running back on some team, yeah. If Khalil Davis ran down J.J. Taylor on that play, like, the whole defense would have been mobbing him.
He was the same number as Khalil Davis, wasn't he?
Yeah, 94.
I kind of thought in the moment, I kind of had one of those weird when you forget about the teams and everything. I thought it was Khalil Davis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that's the kind of thing that Khalil Davis did. He's that kind of guy, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if he's as fast as that, but he's got that hustle player. He's a blue-collar player.
For sure.
So I could see him doing that. Yeah, good for that dude. Not so good for J.J. Taylor. Now, J.J. Taylor had stepped out of bounds, and I wonder if
he didn't know he'd stepped out of bounds.
He might have subconsciously known
No, he did not know.
He
was at top J.J. Taylor speed.
Yeah.
He
That's
didn't
an
know.
Awesome feeling, man. I took down Tiki Barber once on
you
the
did?
Sideline. Yeah, and I had
did
an angle
Did you chase
on him.
Him down?
Yeah.
Dude, nice job, man.
We were getting beat by like 21 points.
I want to mob you right now.
It was but it was one of those things. It was weird. I still don't know how I did it.
Wow.
It was because I had gotten the right angle on him.
Yeah.
So, but it ended up being like 25 yards downfield.
Were you a Jag or a Texan at the time?
A Texan.
You were?
I think.
So you were in your Well, I'm just curious if you were an older player or a younger player. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I was like probably in my
you know back in your younger years
year.
Where you ran a 4.4 or when,
yeah
you know
I'll look up the box score later but enough about me Sean stop trying to make this about me so I went back yesterday because you had brought up how everybody mobbed Lonnie Johnson after he recovered that fumble and I didn't want to try to I wasn't like I was trying to throw shade or anything but I said well I feel like they mob everybody with Lonnie it was notable but partly because he was right on the sideline he was actually off the like they were mobbing him on the sideline so it was a lot easier no energy involved. So that was more impressive in terms of sheer numbers.
They were right there.
But yeah, my point was I wasn't trying to say like, no, they don't actually like
they
Lonnie
They hate
Johnson.
Lonnie Johnson.
No, I just meant that I feel like that's what they do all the time. There's multiple people there.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with you. We'll get into headlines coming up next here. Astros lose last night, but a big day today out at the park. Texans made a signing yesterday. This is interesting. This is actually an interesting one. I want to get into it headlines as well.
It's a critical one.
Exactly. It's a position that's kind of under the radar, but I think this guy could really
help.
The
run game is an issue.
It's a big issue, yeah. So we'll talk about that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Garrettini lost one into right field. Playable. Tyler O'Neill is there, and he puts it away. The Boston Red Sox have won the middle game of this series, defeating the Astros for the first time this year. That snaps a 7-game winning streak for Houston against the Red Sox, dating back to last season. Astros, with a loss tonight, have still won 11 of their last 13 games. Tough one tonight.
I like to think that fan cheer, I'm assuming that's a Red Sox fan cheering in the background, that when Callis got done doing that tag at the end about final score, blah, 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 they just picked up his cup and threw it at them.
Yeah, oops.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sorry, I had to pee in that cup because of the long innings.
What plans are you making for October since your team's not going to be playing?
Every Red Sox game lasts 3 hours, so yeah, sorry. I had to pee in a cup.
These games happen lasting a little longer.
Well, when you walk 8 dudes... were there 8 walks the Astros gave up last night?
Felt like it.
Yeah. Jake Meyers with a brilliant play in the outfield.
That was good to see.
To rescue Brian King there.
That was good to see. And Yiner hitting another home run. Like there were a few good things, but they, as Callis points out, they lose 6-5 to the Red Sox last night. Fortunately, the Mariners are awful at baseball right now.
Yeah.
When the Astros lose, so do the Mariners, so yeah. It's all good.
They're just rescuing themselves from a five-game sweep in the playoffs at this point. Mm-hmm. At least they'll get swept out in three games.
Yeah.
Maybe hopefully the Astros won't even be involved in that round whatsoever, and then there you go.
That's what I'm looking at, man. That's what I'm hoping for.
Are they in the wild card?
Mariners?
Yeah.
No, they're out of it, right?
They're completely out of it.
Yeah,
the
they're
wild
complete,
card right
and so
now,
are the Red Sox right yeah. now. So the Astros win last night 6-5. I guess probably the big story from this one, Astros-wise, would be that Ronel Blanco continues to show signs of deterioration here. He was bad from the jump last night. He gave up three runs in the first inning.
Yeah.
Fortunately, the Astros kind of bailed him out, scored three runs of their own. Singleton got a home run. That was cool to see. But Joe Espada said, just, you know, not Ronel Blanco's night last night.
That's a lineup that won't change much. It's tough to navigate a couple of times through. I thought he, after that first inning, he settled and started making pitches. But they just make you work. They make you work. You know, you adding like an O'Neill and Casas to that lineup adds an extra volume of pitches that you have, a couple extra hitters that hitting team in Boston. But it's just a tough lineup. It's a tough lineup. But I thought, you know, he battled, he kept us in the game, and our bullpen did a tremendous job. Really good job. Just keeping us in the game, and we just couldn't get a big hit there at the end.
Yeah, and it was kind of the, you know, the misfits from the bullpen that kind of kept him in it. It was King, it was Caleb Ferguson.
Yeah.
Ort gave up the home run, unfortunately, in the eighth inning that ended up being the final margin of victory. Dubin came in and danced with the devil a little yeah. bit in the ninth inning. You know, he put a bunch of guys on base. Hey, man, 11-2 in the last 13 games, not much to complain
about. It was
about,
one, I wonder if it's not like you're overly distraught after one game versus a good baseball team. It's the Blanco scenario that's the most depressing thing about that loss. I mean, yeah. Look, he gives up three runs in the first inning. Astros come right back and tie it right back up very, very quickly. And it feels like, oh, yeah, they're still on this roll. They're going to fight through anything. But Blanco just, it continues to wobble on and off the tracks as we get later and later into the season. Verlander comes back today.
Yeah.
Just a few short hours from now, they'll go to a six-man rotation. Hopefully that's the elixir that just allows Blanco to recover a little bit much more, and he just figures out a way to recapture something here over the next 6 weeks.
I'm not counting on Blanco, to be honest with you, like in September and October. It's just, you know, he's starting to pitch to what his profile is now.
Yeah.
You know, like a 30-year-old, you know, I don't say journeyman because he's only ever been with the Astros organization, but he's, we'll look back ultimately, I think, with Blanco and go, okay, maybe those first few months where he was an all-star candidate is just gravy with Blanco. Without Blanco's first 3 months of the season that he had, this team is probably in a dogfight right now with the Mariners instead of up by five games.
He
was the only good thing about this team
for about a month and a half. As all these other pitchers were pitching at like three times their career ERA,
yes.
It was astounding yeah. how bad they were. It yeah. was really, really bad. Yeah, yeah, without Blanco, they would have been up a creek.
Yep. Verlander back today, 110 first pitch. Yeah. Here's Joe Espada on Justin Verlander.
Yeah, I think it will help him, and I think it will help the entire staff. They all can use that extra day. So having JV back, that's also very important to just to have him back, because we could stretch it out a little bit and give those guys an extra day.
All right, so that's Verlander. Did we say the Astros won? Someone texted in. Wait, you just said the Astros won. No, they didn't win. They lost. If we said they won, that was a mistake. They lost 6-5.
I probably said it somehow. I don't know how I would have said it, but you know me.
Yiner hit another home run, so it felt like a win. How's that?
Yeah. Okay.
Because Yiner has all of a sudden become one of the best sluggers at the catcher position in all of baseball.
The thing to remember with Blanco, though, too, I think that, you know, when you say, I don't know if we can depend on him or not, like since June 1st, July 1st, he's still a 3.78 ERA guy.
Really? It doesn't feel like that.
Right, I know. He's had some bad, because I guess the abysmal outings that came in that one stretch, he allowed up four runs two games in a row. But that's a better than average major league pitcher.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a zero or a nothing. It's that you just, I don't know if we can expect him to get back to where he was before the All-Star break, which was a lights-out All-Star caliber.
If you're asking me what the best case scenario is in my mind for Blanco when October rolls around, is that I don't think he's part of the rotation. This is assuming Verlander's. This is assuming health for everybody, okay? So I know that's a big leap given the injuries this staff has suffered this year. But I think, to me, if I'm envisioning a best-case scenario for Blanco, it's one of your regular starters has an uncharacteristically bad outing. It happens every year in the postseason. And he comes in like, the second or third inning, and he gives you three or four quality innings, and you eke out a game. You end up winning a game 7-6 because Blanco came in and gave you three lights-out innings in the middle of a game.
Right.
You know? I just don't think he's going to be one of your top four guys when the playoffs roll around. It's just not trending in that direction.
I think,
for him
plus,
right,
I
now.
Mean, the other thing, too, is just the recent starts of just going 4 1/3 innings.
Yeah,
or
he's
five
not eating,
innings.
Right. He's not eating any innings. That's the big thing. The Texans made a signing yesterday. Definitely was looking forward to talking about this with you, Seth, because it's under the radar because of the position, but I do think it's indicative of kind of maybe what Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans are feeling is a kind of a semi-triage situation right now with the running game. They brought in a fullback yesterday, Nick Bawden, who has not played a ton of NFL football. He's only played in, I think, like 27 to 30 games, somewhere in there. He's been around the league for 6 years.
I don't think he's somebody that they're looking to as the answer, but I think with Andrew Beck, who's only played one preseason game so far this year, he's looked very impressive on the sidelines, sleeveless. He looks like that's the fullback I want for this team.
He's yoked for sure.
But it's mostly walking around and doing drills and stuff. Yeah. So, the run game is an issue right now, and it's not just Damian Pierce. It's not just something that Joe Mixon can fix. We went back and just watching the four run plays that the starters had. There's a lot of bad blocking out there. There's a lot of missed assignments. Troy Harrison, when he was the fullback and they were backed up, I don't know if he made physical contact with the defender that he was trying to block.
That was bad.
Coming out of the end zone there. The other bad thing that happened on that play was Blake Fisher whiffed on his guy completely. And it was a play that Laremy Tunsil would have made. He was threatened by two guys, and he kind of just got a deer. He was a deer caught in the headlights in that moment. Like, he didn't have to be a road mauling run blocker, because Laremy Tunsil is not that. But Laremy Tunsil would have made the right block there. So that's, in certain instances like that, it's going to make a difference. Damian Pierce is an issue. He's an issue. But like, even if we take Damian Pierce out of the equation, the starting offensive line in that game did not run block well at all. It was way worse than I thought after watching on the TV copy. Just too many mistakes.
Bawden, this is probably one of the rare teams around the NFL that Bawden could get signed to in late August and feel like, I got a decent shot at making this team.
Yeah.
You know, like, these are the fullbacks they have right now.
Right,
are either banged up, not good, or both.
Can you go out there and just put your, can you get your hands on the jersey number of the guy opposite?
Here's your part of the playbook.
And part of it, too, is, I mean, they're doing this thing. This is the stuff that feels like the Bill O'Brien era, where, man, they want to be big fit. They want to go out there and play with two tight ends. They want to go out and have a fullback. They want to be rough and physical. But they don't show any ability to actually move people. And that's the concerning thing. And then, Sean, on the other play that they had when they were backed up in the end zone down there, or they weren't in the end zone, but they tried to run the ball. I mean, you end up with like four linemen in a tight end on two defenders and two other guys running free. It was just a hodgepodge mess.
It's been happening for 4 years.
Guys aren't getting off
team.
On backers. Somebody yesterday, Corey Barrett, who is a good follow on Twitter, and he does a lot with the time. He and I disagreed. He wanted me to give credit to Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green for minimizing Dexter Lawrence in the run game. I'm like, well, no, because Dexter Lawrence is a nose tackle, and those guys were not getting off on linebackers. They were stuck on Dexter Lawrence. So production for a nose tackle is linebackers running
free. Occupying guys.
Yeah. Like, it's not always a Dexter Lawrence knocking out your quarterback or something. And they didn't do a good job with that. I'm optimistic. Oh, we're in headlines, aren't we? I'm talking too much. Sorry. Okay. I'm optimistic about the young offensive linemen still. It's just that they're not there yet. They just need to get there.
Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use the savings calculator to find out how at t-mobile.com/switch. Up next, positional group rankings on ESPN. Can the Texans get to a Super Bowl with these two position groups ranking this low? This is actually a good segue off of what we were just talking about. We'll discuss that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.